Street or at 523-9135.
Some more.
What?
Please, sir. I want some more.
More? Catch him!
Snatch him!
Hold him!
Scold him!
Pounce him! Trounce him! Pick him up and bounce him!
Oh, music from Oliva there, and we're going to be talking to folks from Floyd Dryden Elementary, or Floyd Dryden Middle School, sorry, we'll be talking to them about their production of Oliver coming up next week, February 22nd and 23rd. Also going to be talking to folks from Eagle Crest today, and the Roller Girls will be in here, folks from the City Museum, and also Steve Henriksen is going to be here talking about the lecture series coming up at the Alaska State Museum about Alaska's moon rock. It's all ahead right here on Wednesday's edition of A Juno Afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Andy Klein with you as the host for today, and today is going to be some snow showers diminishing with additional snow accumulation up to about an inch being called for, and snow developing into the evening tonight, mixing with rain late from downtown Juneau south, and snow accumulation Juneau downtown and north about 2 inches tonight with lows right around 32 degrees. Rain and snow in the morning, and then rain heavy at times in the afternoon is being called for tomorrow as the temperatures get up higher in the high 30s, right around 40 degrees, and rain tomorrow night, heavy at times, with lows only around 34 degrees. So, blech, rainy coming up. However, since it's still in the 30s down here at snow level, at sea level, we know that the snow will be up there at Eagle Crest, and sounds like it might be even coming down at times, so that's good news for us. Coming up next, we got National Native News, and then again, we'll be talking to Steve Henriksen, who's here in the studio with us, about Alaska's moon rock. But first, here is National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In the State of the Union, President Obama mentioned climate change, the Violence Against Women Act, and the economy, priorities among many tribal leaders. He also laid out a jobs plan, which Democrats like, but as Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, Republicans are wary of its price tag.
The president is calling for a lot of investments that could affect Indian country, including transportation, first responders, and education. California Democrat John Garamendi says he's glad Mr. Obama is rekindling his Jobs Act that sat largely untouched in the Republican-controlled House last session.
That's a very, very good start. The American Jobs Act was a complete array of things that we can do. The infrastructure was there, the education was there, the advanced manufacturing, all of those pieces of the puzzle were there. Now we need to do it.
But Republicans are dubious about what they heard. Many are asking how the president plans to pay for his jobs package. Arizona Republican Congressman Trent Franks says he fears the president will want to hike taxes, which would hurt workers.
You know, when you follow the rules and work hard, that you should be successful, and yet his policies make it almost impossible to do that.
But California Democrat Ami Bera says the price tag alone shouldn't deter lawmakers from investing.
And sometimes you have to make investments on the front end to get the return. We've always done that. You know, whether it was a space program, whether it was the interstate highway program, we've got to make those investments, and we have to do, you know, rebuilding the middle class.
Before the president can move on to his jobs agenda, he'll have to work with House Republicans on a fiscal deal, or else billions of dollars will be indiscriminately slashed from the budget in March, a scenario that has tribal leaders across the country worried. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins traveled 300 miles to Milwaukee again this week to talk more about his opposition to the proposed taconite mine near the Bad River Reservation in northern Wisconsin. One of the Chippewa leader's stops was at the Rotary Club. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Chairman Wiggins became the first tribal leader to speak to the Milwaukee Rotary Club in at least 11 years, and perhaps much longer. He told the Rotarians how he believes the taconite mine would threaten ground and surface waters on or near the tribal reservation. He says if a Republican-backed mining deregulation bill advancing at the Wisconsin State Capitol becomes law, the Bad River and other mining opponents would turn to the federal government for help.
There we have treatment as a state, well, like the state of Wisconsin, and we have water quality standards that are essentially delegated federal authority.
Wiggins also says it's possible that the real aim of the mining bill is to open the door for other proposed mining projects in northern Wisconsin. Wiggins seems to have won over some members of the Milwaukee Rotary Club, especially those concerned about sport fishing in Lake Superior, worldwide water supplies, or the iron and steel markets. Other Rotarians, though, are in a wait-and-see mode. Patent attorney Dan Federley says his decision boils down to a key question.
Is there an environmentally safe way to extract that ore from the ground? Or what we're really talking about here is just stopping the whole project and leaving the ore in the ground.
Next week, Milwaukee Rotarians will hear from a pro-mining spokesman for Wisconsin's largest business group. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
On this day in 1998, the Colorado River Native Nations Alliance and environmentalists protested a proposed nuclear waste dump in Ward Valley, California. They occupied the area for more than 100 days and claimed victory when the Bureau of Land Management halted the project. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Hi, this is Scott Wagner.
And I'm Steve Schick. We're realtors with the Southeast Alaska Board of Realtors.
We understand the strong communities start in the home.
And that violence against women is destructive to women, families, and communities.
While not all men use violence,
we believe that all men have a responsibility to end it.
Through the White Ribbon Campaign,
I pledge not to commit, condone, or remain silent
about violence against women because
Alaska men choose respect.
This message brought to you by Juneau's Violence Prevention Coalition.
Martha can move in the game of life. Yeah. Andy Kaufman in the wrestling match.
Well, as REM sings about Man on the Moon there. We've actually got a little piece of the moon here in Alaska. It's back in its proper hands, finally. It's Alaska's moon rock, and Steve Henriksen is here to talk about it. He's with the Alaska State Museum. And it's part of a lecture series coming up Thursday at noon. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
And as we were just saying, this Alaska's moon rock has quite a history. It hasn't just sat on the shelf for 30 years waiting to be talked about. It's had a little bit of a travel history itself, and tell us a little bit about it. We had a moon rock that you say President Nixon gave to every governor, got a moon rock from the original Apollo 11 landing.
Right.
So collected by the greats, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin collected this moon rock for us.
That's right, yeah. And Alaska's moon rock was carried back to Alaska after Nixon gave it to our governor, Keith Miller, in 1969. And after that, it went on tour to different schools and museums around the state. And it ended up in the Alaska Transportation Museum in Anchorage. And that was an aviation museum primarily, but they put the moon rock up there. And unfortunately, there was a fire there. And right after the fire, the moon rock went missing. And there was quite a search for it right afterwards. They never came up with anything, and unfortunately it just vanished. And
now, was it a massive fire where there was massive destruction, or was it more just a smoke damage?
No, it was a pretty massive fire, and a lot of the aircraft was the fabric covered, and it just that just was really volatile, and just the fire ripped through the place. And
so the idea was that this moon rock was missing, and basically maybe it just kind of got lost in the fire.
Well, yeah, several people saw it after the fire. They knew it survived, but after that, the building was, you know, the side was ripped open and they really had a hard time securing it. And somebody said that the curator took it home with him that night because there was just no way to lock the building up. But later he said he didn't. So there was a investigation, but they never got anywhere with it. And it just kept it in the back of our minds. Every curator since has been handed a file on their first day of work. You know, study this. This is going to come back someday. And, you know, 23 years ago, I was given that file and kept my ears open, but never did really, you know, find anything until out of the blue in 2010, the state was sued by the guy who stole it. And he said,
classic
that, you know, he
criminal
owned,
error.
Yeah.
It's so funny to hear this. I mean, you know, it's obviously serious, but it's very funny to hear. Okay, so
yeah, I mean, it's a serious thing to get a lawsuit, but when it happened, I just sat down and laughed for 5 minutes because, you know, this was the beginning of the end of the caper, you know, because there is no private ownership of moon rocks. They all came from government missions, and unless the government says we don't own this anymore, it still belongs to them. So we had a pretty solid case, but the plaintiff informed us that the moon rock was out of the country, and that complicated things greatly. But to make a long story short, we said we really have to authenticate this thing because there have been cases of moon rocks in museums turning out to be petrified wood or a
sure.
cinder block or something. So, we asked that the moon rock be taken to Houston to the moon rock scientists and have them authenticate it. And so they agreed to that. They took it to NASA, and we knew that once NASA got it, they were never getting it back. And as the case unfolded, it became very clear that they really had no case, that the state never abandoned the property. And
this is so, now this has an interesting reality TV component to it. This guy is
that's another good story. We didn't recognize the name of the plaintiff, and I started I Googled him, and it turned out he was one of the captains featured on the first season of Deadliest Catch. And then it turns out that he was the foster child of the former curator of that museum.
Oh, so that's the connection. I see.
But, you know, we didn't know that until we found the curator's obituary, and it listed him in the obituary. So these pieces started falling together.
So it started off cold case.
Yeah,
and
it was
a
cold case. And by the time it was ending up, we were all trying to decide what actor we wanted to portray ourselves in the film version of this. Ultimately, once the case was over, I was able to go to the Johnson Space Center in Houston and walk into the Moon Rock Vault and carry back our moon rock.
Well,
and
let me stop. Yeah. What's the moon rock vault like?
Well, it's
sounds amazing.
It's a high security building. It's no after 9/11, it's no longer on the tour anymore, so you have to have some kind of official business to be there. And it's got all the they're really worried about the moon rock samples being contaminated with substances from the earth. They're trying to keep them as pure as possible, and they keep them in a nitrogen atmosphere, and you have to wear a space suit and use the gloves into the, you know, it's like a hazmat type handling. Everything is sealed up, and they even have, when they want to cut up a moon rock to make samples, they have a bandsaw that's sealed up in one of these nitrogen atmospheres, so they can actually saw them up without exposing them to the air.
Wow.
And then they package them in little nitrogen fill cartridges and send them around to different scientists. And our moon rock was in that vault for a time. And then, I carried it back to Alaska, which made me extremely nervous because after being missing for so long, I didn't want to be the curator who lost it again.
Oops.
that kind of thing tends to follow a curator's career, around with you. So,
do you have to have some sort of special like vacuum carrying case, in order to keep it from being contaminated?
All of those displays were, the moon rocks were sealed in a lucite sphere, so they're contained, and that originally when the moon rocks came back, they quarantined them because they didn't want any back contamination from alien microbes that might take over the Earth.
Sure.
But within a short period of time, they ruled that out. So they felt that it was safe to give these samples around. And I'm really glad it was safe, because they not only did they give the samples to all the states, but they gave them to all the countries in the world.
But who knows? In alien time, it could be a blink of an eye. I mean, maybe it's about to happen. We don't know.
That's right. Yeah, we don't know. Every morning, I check that little sphere for cracks, just to make sure nothing's
trying to bust out. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, we could go on. Just one last question about the moon rock. How big is it?
It's been interesting to see people's reaction when they see it. Adults, they see it and they say, "That's it." But little kids, they just, "Wow, look at that." So it's actually, it's hard to put it into, compare it to a coin, for instance, because it's much smaller than a coin. Yeah, it's like eraser
right.
is probably close to it. There's four of those. And, they only, from Apollo 11, they only brought back 48 pounds of rock. So they couldn't really afford to give that much of it away. And they showed me one of the larger ones down in Houston, and it's the size of a softball. So they weren't bringing back huge boulders.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, and that's got to be one of the most precious commodities on Earth.
It is. I mean, it's truly, beyond value to have something like that. And we're extremely lucky to have it back. And as part of the lecture tomorrow, we'll have it out on display.
Great. So the lecture is tomorrow at noon?
Right.
And this is very cool because it's part of a four-part lecture series. So tomorrow the lecture is about the moon rock and all about it, about the history of it, about its story, and about moon rocks in general, I'm guessing. And then tell me about the other ones that are scheduled out through the rest of the month.
Starting tomorrow, they'll be every Thursday from 12 to 1 at the museum. A week from now, on the 21st, Larry Hipschman from the State Archives is talking about this massive project that they have to organize all the records from the Exxon Valdez oil spill litigation. And believe me, they have a warehouse full of papers from that one case, and they have to somehow separate out what is of historical value and of legal value from other things, and Larry will be talking about the process of doing that. And on the subject of shipwrecks, the following week, Ellen Carley is talking about the science and ethics of caring for shipwreck artifacts, and that's something that our museum is specializing in, the care of wet artifacts that come off of various shipwrecks. So that's what she's talking about on the 28th. And then March 7th, Sorrel Goodwin from the Alaska State Library Historical Collections is talking about the cosmology of the Tlingit longhouse, about the traditional longhouses, with the post and beam architecture covered with planking. And there's a lot to that architecture, whereas a lot of buildings, there's nothing symbolic really about them. The Tlingit house design expresses their worldview, and he'll be talking about that. Finally, on March 14th, the state archaeologist Dave McMahon will be coming down from Anchorage to talk about the archaeology of Russian America in Alaska. He's done some digs on various Russian sites in Alaska, and we'll have some interesting stories to tell and artifacts to show.
Wow, fascinating sounding lecture series. It, as you said, starts tomorrow, runs all the way through March 14th. It's every Thursday at noon at the Alaska State Museum. And tomorrow's is a fascinating one, and you heard just little bits of it here so far, but you'll hear the full story tomorrow at noon. Alaska's Moon Rock. Steve Henriksen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Tell me, are you locked in the pond? Are you goofing on Elvis too, baby? Are we losing touch? If you believe they put a man on the moon, man on the moon,
A truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon, where snow showers are diminishing for the rest of the day, but then more snow developing late this evening and mixing with rain late, but accumulation might be up to around 2 inches depending on where you are. If you're south of town, might be more rainy, and if you're north of town, might be more snow. And then rain and snow is in the forecast for tomorrow morning, and then heavy rain at times in the afternoon. Oh, brother. With snow accumulation, possibly to an inch, but a lot of rain mixed in there as highs get to around 40 degrees at sea level tomorrow, and then rain and heavy at times Thursday night as well. Well, that's not the best forecast, but that means all snow up on Eagle Crest, so that's good for folks up there. Next up, we've got Jane Lindsay and Dave Riccio here, and thanks to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it. You've got some interesting stuff coming up Saturday from 10:30 to noon, all kind of about paper.
Yeah, right. At the Juno Douglas City Museum. Across the street from the state capitol.
Look for the totem pole.
For it, not only one, but two totems.
That's right. Beautiful totems. Yeah. That's right. So tell me about this. This is part of your Coffee and Collections series.
Right. It's a combined David Riccio Day, actually. We're just calling it David Riccio at the Juno Douglas City Museum.
You gotta have your own day.
He gets his own day.
I want an Andy Klein Day. I guess I have to do something artistic and creative.
He's going to be doing a free Coffee and Collections presentation on paper. Papermaking. He's quite interesting. I don't know if you've ever talked to him about paper and papermaking and printing.
A little bit, yeah.
But he's the bomb. He knows it all.
We'll just talk about it right now. We'll just the little project you're working on for us is the 40th anniversary. This is a very special little sneak preview at 40th anniversary print for KTOO. So I've had conversations even very recently with Dave about that. So what kind of stuff are you going to be covering during your talk?
This talk, the museum is going to be about paper and its uses in printmaking primarily. I'm a printmaker, as you well know, and I've been doing a lot, among other things. And I've collected paper over the years for various kinds of printmaking, various kinds of uses for that sort of art paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a really extensive collection of paper that Jane asked me if I would share with the museum. And that's the first part of this.
Does it make a huge difference on prints, the type of paper and all that kind of thing? What sort of effects?
You become obsessed by paper when you become a printmaker. And there are prints that are done with certain kinds of inks that require a certain kind of surfacing on a paper. I'm going to talk a little bit about the uses of paper and how papers manipulated to make it more useful for certain kinds of printmaking. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about making paper, and I've done a little bit of that. I'm not an expert at paper making, but I've done enough of it to know something about it.
And that's a whole art form in and of itself.
It is, yeah. And I've got a really interesting video that dates from about 1972 that I'll be sharing at the Coffee and Collections on Saturday.
Cool.
And it's a traditional printmaking in Japan. It's just outside of Kyoto in Japan, and the person that the video was made of was considered a national treasure. He was in his 70s when the video was made, so I'm sure he's gone by now. But it's the traditional process, basically the same process that paper was invented making in paper. Modern paper was invented in China in the first century, and that skill transferred into Korea and into Japan through the migration out of China of the papermakers. Mm. And the traditional paper has been made pretty much constantly since about the 6th century in Japan all the way until modern times. And this method that this guy uses is right back to the traditional methods of making it.
And he's making the paper itself?
Or? He's making a paper called Hosho, which was the Hoshogame, which is the paper that was used by the samurai to distribute their orders to their underlings. It's got a long history in Japan, and it's a very nice rice paper, quote unquote rice paper.
Right.
And that paper is used in Japan to do block printing, wood block
calligraphy
printing.
Type
and some
stuff.
Calligraphy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, and block printing.
And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the way paper migrated into the Western world. And so I've got a friend who owns Atlantic Papers, and he sent me some information about some of the paper mills that he uses back in Europe. And so I'll have some paper that he has sent to me. And the Western way of making paper is slightly different than the Japanese way, but you can see where the transition occurred.
Mm.
And so that's what the morning's going to be about. And then I've got samples of paper for people to look at and play with.
Yeah. Now, do you ever look at a print, even one that's, you know, maybe a high price print or a nice print, and go, oh boy, did they use the wrong paper there? Has that happened?
Oh yeah, you can see it.
Really?
And a lot of times people will use the wrong paper or the wrong sizing on a paper with a certain kind of ink, and the paper will start deteriorating very, very quickly, and you'll start losing ink off the surface of the print. It won't hold the ink.
Huh.
The paper's got to be manufactured in such a way that the ink will bond to the surface of the paper when the ink is transferred.
Wow, okay.
For instance,
but not soak in too much and
not blur the image or soak
all those
in too
things.
Much.
Yeah. Right.
You've seen some of the inkjet prints, the giclée prints that I've been doing, and that's a special paper that's a recently manufactured sizing that goes on the surface, and they're still secret. They don't share those sizings.
Is that right? Those are trade secrets.
Those are trade secrets. Yeah, huh. They're not even the patents even aren't out there for them because they're keeping them so close.
Oh, that's really interesting. So they just So Jane, tell me a little bit about what was it about this subject that made you think, well, this is going to be one of these things that people can really get into listening to. Yeah.
Well, the museum has a lot to do with Juno history, but we're also very focused on the arts, and artists show with us all the time. And digital printing is very much in rage right now, and as well as archival inks and whatnot. And David just has a wealth of knowledge. So just talking with him over the years, it occurred to me in one conversation where I think we were about 25 minutes later, you have a lot to share.
Yeah, wait
and
a minute.
I think there's other people in the community who would really like to hear that, because there's a lot of artists we're making art and we're using paper, and there's a lot of digital printing going on. So he agreed. And then we decided it would be really good to wrap it up with, we've got our ninth annual 12x12 coming up. And so he's going to actually be teaching a class, I believe, at 12:30 for just a couple of hours, where we'll be using some of his papers, and you can make a 12x12 art piece.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really a wonderful program, that 12x12. A limited, small area,
12x12.
And then what do you do in it is all up to you.
Well, and the theme this year is past and present Juno, so where better place to get started than looking
than
around
the museum. Yes, absolutely.
With David and his paper.
Yeah, well, it's a great resource. The City Museum is a wonderful resource. And, it's the City Museum Paper Workshops. It's happening Saturday from 10:30 to noon. And then at 12:30, you'll also be doing
a two-hour class that's being offered starting at 12:30 until 2:30.
Fantastic.
And it'll get people started on their 12x12s, which, when is it? When's the deadline?
The deadline is the last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of February. I think it's the 21st through the 23rd, and the exhibit's up. It opens March, the first Friday in March, and it's up through the middle of April.
Great.
And just one word on the class, we really need people to pre-register.
Okay.
So if you're at all interested, call us up and register so we make sure we've got you down. and we have all the materials.
And that's the City Museum, Juno yes. Douglas City Museum. It's you can stop by, you can call to pre-register, and then 10:30 to noon, really interesting talk all about paper from Dave Riccio. Dave and Jane, thanks so much for coming
Thanks for having us.
Okay.
Thank you, Andy.
Of blue, wrap your presents to your darling from you. Pretty pencils to write, I love you. Pretty paper.
And pretty paper will be the subject of Dave Riccio's talk at the City Museum. Coming up next, here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac, and then we'll be back. Roller Girls are in the house. Also, we've got the cast and folks from Oliver, and we'll be talking to folks at Eagle Crest about what's happening up on the mountain. Here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 13th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of the novelist Georges Simenon, born in Liège, Belgium, 1903, best known for his detective novels featuring Inspector Maigret. He wrote some 400 books, each of which took him on average 8 days to write. This is the week of Valentine's Day. We are here to remind you of that. It is tomorrow. And to put you in mind of love letters, the beauty of them, should you be moved to write one, as Nathaniel Hawthorne did, author of The Scarlet Letter. He wrote love letters to an older woman, Sophia Peabody, whom he married, and on his first wedding anniversary wrote to her, "We were never so happy as now, never such wide capacity for happiness, yet overflowing with all that the day and every moment brings to us. Methinks this birthday of our married life is like a cape, which we have now doubled and find a more infinite ocean of love stretching out before us." And James Joyce, the author of complex fiction containing enigmas and puzzles and wordplay, wrote so simply to his great love, Nora Barnacle. In 1909, he wrote, "You are my only love. You have me completely in your power. I know and feel that if I am to write anything fine or noble, I shall do so only by listening to the doors of your heart. I love you deeply and truly, Nora. There is not a particle of my love that is not yours. If you would only let me, I would speak to you of everything in my mind. But sometimes I fancy from your look that you would only be bored by me. Anyhow, Nora, I love you. I cannot live without you. I would like to give you everything that is mine, any knowledge I have, any emotions I myself feel or have felt, any likes or dislikes I have, any hopes I have or remorse. I would like to go through life side by side with you, telling you more and more until we grew to be one being together, until the hour should come for us to die. Even now the tears rush to my eyes and sobs choke my throat as I write this. Nora, we have only one short life in which to love. Oh, my darling, be only a little kinder to me. Bear with me a little, even if I am inconsiderate and unmanageable, and believe me, we will be happy together. Let me love you in my own way. Let me have your heart always close to mine, to hear every throb of my life, every sorrow, every joy." Here's a poem for today by Hal Sirovitz, entitled Undecided. "Your mother and I didn't know what to get you for a present," Father said. "We kept asking you, but you wouldn't tell us. So we got what's good for all occasions, a shirt. But since we've given you that for your last 3 birthdays, we were hoping to give you something different. We were thinking of just giving you cash, but that'd have been too impersonal. Plus, you might have saved it and not spent it. This way, even if you don't wear them, we might still get some use out of them. If you suddenly started accusing us of never getting you anything, we could open your drawer and show you the shirts. Just because you don't wear them doesn't negate our intent. Undecided by Hal Surovitz from his collection Father Said, published by Soft Skull Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by the National Geographic Channel, presenting Killing Lincoln, based on the novel by Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. Killing Lincoln premieres this Sunday at 8 p.m. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Well, they really do, because their reputation precedes them. It's the Juno Roller Girls, and they're here. They do care about their reputation. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Andy?
Great. Well, Vertebreaker and Just Julie have joined me here in the studio, and thanks you guys for coming in. You're getting ready for the big international match coming up Saturday, UConn Roller Girls against the Juno Roller Girls.
Roger Dodger.
It's going to be awesome.
A great one.
Tell
so
me a little
excited.
Bit about the roster for Juno Roller Girls for this one. Who's kind of a...
Oh, man. We've got a fantastic roster. It pretty much doesn't get better than this. We've got a lot of our top-tier jammers and blockers.
Verba
and I will both be on there. We only have two new skaters, Kylie Wyote and Scary U Knightley. They'll be joining us for the first time on the travel team. They both have been vetted on home team bouts, but this is kind of a really cool opportunity for them to skate against some people they don't have a lot of track time with.
Against non-Americans.
Non-Americans, yep.
You're representing our country on the track. I love it.
All eight wheels.
Yeah, and all eight wheels, rolling American.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm with you. Those Canadians come down here. Man, you don't just come down here.
Yeah.
Protect the house.
They're gonna see some interesting stuff out on the track. You know, we've got
strategy.
Strategy. Hot Damn, Combustible, Vertebreaker.
And without getting too technical, there's kind of a big rules change. This is going to be the first thing that you guys are skating with all the major penalties. There's no more minor penalties, so the ticky-tack kind of fouls are taken out. Everything that's called is a major penalty.
You have to go sit in the penalty box.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that's going to mean more time in the sin bin or less? How do you think that's going to play out?
We're seeing a little bit more time in the sin bin at practice, but we're working really hard at minimizing those penalties and getting a feel for the new rule set. I'm hoping we're going to keep box time to a minimum, and we'll be playing a lot of power plays against a hopefully narrow UConn pack.
It seems like it'll make it a lot more straightforward for the crowd, though. Like, if something's called, you go out,
it'll
right?
It'll be super fan-friendly.
Much less confusing.
Yeah, and because that's the thing, you'll see a hand go up, and you're like, well, they stayed on or they stayed off or what's going on? Because if it's a minor, you don't have to go off immediately, but if you get three minors, you did.
Right.
All that stuff's gone. Now, if a foul is called, like a lot of sports, foul's called, penalty's going to be called, they're going to call out your number, and you're going to go spend time.
All the penalties are based on impact on the game. So, I mean, you'll still see a lot of stuff that, you know, maybe isn't clean derby. But if it's not making an impact, you know, it keeps rolling. People keep going. About goes on. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, the one thing, if folks out there are listening and have not ever been to a roller derby match, you're missing out. I mean, this is such a blast to go to these things. The crowd is crazy and raucous. It's like a real deal, big-time sporting event that is super fun happening in Juneau. So, but there's some tickets still available, right?
There are plenty of tickets available.
All right.
You can get them at Hearthside or Rainy Day Books. You could go pick them up at the Jack or go to their website. You could go to our website.
Cool. Yeah, you can just kind of all these different places that still get them. There's still some available, but these matches typically sell out. So, you know, get them early, right?
Yeah.
Get them early.
Pick them up right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plus, you save $2 per ticket if you get them now, so.
Cool. And then you guys are doing something even further and really cool, which is that you've gotten involved with Juneau Community Schools and you're teaching there, right? What's happening with that?
Oh, we run an intro to skating class on Sundays from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Helping people get comfortable and build skills and confidence on skates. It's a fantastic opportunity for people who are looking for something a little different in terms of their exercise routine or, you know, just branching out, getting out a little bit more. And
sure.
It's particularly good for people who are considering a future in roller derby.
Yes. Well, that's what you're looking for, kind of.
Yeah.
Plus,
the
burgeoning
after the class,
talent.
You can hang out and watch the scrimmage.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, there's a scrimmage on Sunday?
Sunday's right after intro class.
You mean you're going to do a mat? You're going to have a bout on Saturday and then do a scrimmage on Sunday? I mean, you're going to be, I mean, Monday is going to be rough.
Actually, this Sunday is fresh meat assessments,
yeah.
Right?
This Sunday, we actually are putting all of our new skaters to task and having them demonstrate exactly how confident they are with all their skills. So after a real hard match
and
a little bit of celebration, test taking.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. It's the Juneau Roller Girls. They're going up against the Yukon Roller Girls. The name of the match is a love skate relationship. This is the second time you guys have gone. Third time or second time
second
you guys
time.
Guys
second
have gone
time.
Against them, and they are here again to try to see if they can keep up on the track with you. I'm thinking Juneau Roller Girls got it in the bag, but you know, don't get overconfident based on my prediction. They're still going to be tough out there. But,
it'll be tough. It'll be a great match, but we're feeling pretty good about our training and going into this.
It's all happening Saturday. What time does it start?
The doors open at 6:15. Wheels roll at 7.
All right. And it is Juneau Roller Girls. If you haven't gone before, do yourself a flavor and get out there and watch the Juneau Roller Girls. Thanks so much, Verta Breaker and Just Julie, for coming in.
Thanks,
and
Andy.
Good luck on Saturday.
Yeah, we appreciate the support.
Absolutely.
Hope to see everybody out there.
Sure. Well, we all recognize that music from the great musical Oliver. And out at Floyd Dryden, they're going to take on Oliver. Mike Busey's with me in the studio, and Don Colden and the whole cast is actually out at Floyd Dryden with us right now, too, on the phone. How are you guys doing out there in Floyd Dryden?
We're doing great at Floyd Dryden.
Okay, awesome. Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks
sure.
for calling.
And Mike, thanks so much for joining us as well.
Thank you, Andy.
Yeah, so Mike, I'll turn to you first. Tell me about the idea of taking on Oliver. It's a big task.
It's a big task. This is the third year that Floyd Dryden has done a musical. We did Fiddler on the Roof 2 years ago and Aladdin last year. Which is great because we're getting a solid acting core and singing core with these musicals. And this year, I'm really excited about what we've done. To be honest, I was scared to death taking this on because it's a big project, and this is our first real full on Broadway style, you know, from New York, paying the rights, you know, the whole honcho thing.
Right.
And it is really going to be great.
Cool.
I'm really excited about it.
It's really, yeah, it's such a, I was in Oliver when I was a kid in
the Artful Dodger,
what we call junior high. No, I can't remember. I wasn't Oliver. I was one of the gang, you know.
Hey, where's my wallet?
I might've had like one or two lines, you know, but it was super, super fun musical. It was great as a kid. I remember it being so great to sing because it's music that's kind of written for kids to sing.
Yeah, well, it really fits in. And for those people that don't know the musical well, I was wondering if I could give a 20-second musical synopsis of it.
Oh, here we go.
Understand that I am not singing in the play. So don't judge the play by my singing. The kids sing much better than this. But I hope some of this will bring back some memories for people and bring them to the show. Oliver, Oliver, food, glorious food, consider yourself our mate. Boy for sale. It's a fine life, it's a fine life. Oompa-pa, everyone knows. You've got to pick a pocket or two, boys. Got to pick a pocket or two. Who will buy this wonderful feeling? I'd do anything for you, dear, anything. So, those are the ones that I can sing right off the top.
I went through a whole range of emotions there while you were doing that. I was up and down.
I was
happy. I was crying. I was repulsed by the evil Fagin. Oh, the whole thing. Amazing. Hey, Dawn, out there at Floyd Dryden, can we get a hello from the cast?
Oh, my gosh.
That was pretty good. Wow, that was pretty good. Yeah, we got a whole cast of folks there. Hey, you want to give a little bit of a chorus or something?
Yes, we would love to give a little bit of a chorus. All right. Yeah, we're going to do the one that we're very famous for, Oliver's famous for, food, glorious food.
Nice.
All right. Quiet in the house. 3, 2, 1.
Is it worth waiting for if we live till 84? All we ever get is cruel. Every day we say our prayer, will they change the bill of fare till we get the same old cruel? There's not a crust, not a crumb. Can we find, can we beg, can we borrow more cash? But there's nothing to stop us from getting a crew when we all close our eyes and enough.
That's awesome, Dawn. You guys, that was great. Even over the phone,
the
I could
phone,
hear.
Yeah, wow.
Even over the cell phone, that sounded amazing. Thanks so much.
Well, I've got to give credit for Missouri Smythe, and she's playing, probably Jackie Farnsworth is playing the piano, but Missouri Smythe has led the musical direction with the kids, and as most people know, that she directs the Alaska Youth mm-hmm. Choir as well, and has done a fabulous job with the kids with their singing.
Very cool.
It's just satisfying all the way through. Really, there's not a bum note in the show.
Dawn, tell me a little bit about you've got the challenge of dealing with 30 unruly kids there.
Well, I like unruly actually. they are actually really great, and their energy. Here's what I love about doing Oliver with middle schoolers. Is they bring an innocence to it, and they don't have this adult conception of all the pain. And so it's fresh to them learning about children in the late 1800s. It's fresh, and so it's new and it's raw, and the experience that they bring to the stage is really heartwarming.
And that's a key part of the whole story, is really understanding how on the edge, how hard it was, especially for Oliver and for those kids in the orphanage, how it was in some ways, how you can take the humor out of the fact that the Artful Dodger and those other people are pickpockets, and because they are so on the edge, and it's just a way of them living and being on the streets.
Another bunch of nutty juvenile delinquents.
Yes,
you know,
those
don't we have
kids,
them all?
These kids today. But so anyway, yeah, it's that's a really wonderful wonderful kind of insight into it. Well, give me some of the details about when this is playing, how people can get tickets, how people can get and go see Oliver playing at the Floyd Dryden at Floyd Dryden.
You bet. It'll be this next Friday, February 22nd at 7 p.m., and that'll be at Thunder Mountain Auditorium. And then two more shows the following Saturday, February 23rd. At 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The tickets are $10 for individual tickets and $25 for a family of four.
And let me just reiterate, I just said at Floyd Dryden. It's by Floyd Dryden, but the performances are at Thunder Mountain. So yes. Let me just make that clear that it's at Thunder Mountain, a really nice space to be doing this in as well.
Great. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and Joe Corda does a great job with the lights. And we're the set is being built by one of the teachers in a carpentry class at Floyd Dryden. They're putting together a big span. Anyways, I won't describe it in too much detail, but the backdrop was painted by drawn by the Floyd Dryden art teacher.
Very cool.
And painted by some volunteers from Aware.
And that's a challenge, too, I would think about this. There's quite a few set changes. There's street scenes, and there's Fagin's hideout, and there's the orphanage, and there's all these different places that you have to convey in one play. Mm.
Another real advantage or a real highlight for the play is going to be that we're using a full orchestra, which is great. We've got professional musicians and some student musicians from Thunder Mountain playing this, and even a couple of Floyd Dryden kids. But it's challenging music, and so we're going with a lot of adults. But it really sounds great. We did a rehearsal this last Sunday, and it was fun. It was the first time we'd been together with the Floyd Dryden kids, and the orchestra would play a number with them while they sang, and they'd get to the end of each number, and they'd burst into cheers and yelling. Like we couldn't get through a tune without everybody breaking out into applause.
So exciting. I tell you, you're going to hear a lot of applause if it sounds anything like the little sample we just heard from the group that has gathered there at Floyd Dryden. Hey, thanks to all of you guys out there at Floyd Dryden, and thanks to you, Don, as well. I really appreciate it, and thanks for letting me put you on the spot and doing a little singing there.
Well, thanks, and we also wanted to shout out to the principal, Mr. Miller, who's been helping keep this project alive for 3 years, and also letting us talk about such heavy subject and deal with it in a professional way and help the kids work through everything.
Very cool. All right, Don Colden out there at Floyd Dryden with the cast of Oliver, and thanks to you, Mike Busey, here in the studio as well. That's Oliver. It's happening starting next week, February 22nd and 23rd. It's all happening at Thunder Mountain, and tickets are just $10 and available one more time.
At Hearthside and at the door.
Okay, terrific. That's Oliver. Go check it out. Thanks to all you for doing it. Can I get one more all right? Thanks from the crowd there at Floyd Dryden. Very good.
Thanks
so much. All right.
Thank you.
Coming up next is Eagle Crest Ski Report, Jake and Jeffra. Take it away, Jake.
We're not going to follow up with singing.
No, we're not singing, Andy.
We're not
sorry.
That capable.
Come on. Who's with me on this?
No, we talk snow. We don't sing.
No.
Sorry.
Well, let's talk snow. I think there's supposed to be some snow coming up here, right? I mean, there's snow showers down here, sea level, but a lot of rain and snow is predicted for sea level, but it's going to still be pretty cold down here. Right around high 30s. So it seems like that sounds pretty good for up at Eagle Crest next few days.
Yeah, I think it does. Looking at the forecast, it looks like I don't want to jinx it, so it looks like there's some pretty good chance for snow. We got about an inch and a half since Monday at the Day Lodge, and The word on the street is pretty good skiing up high and down to about the top of Hooter. Then it starts to get a little dicey from that other stuff, but the rain and that stuff we don't want to talk about that we had last weekend. So, but I think
it hasn't been the most. I mean, the weather's just been really torturous. It's been tough. But hey, it doesn't keep people from getting on the mountain. It doesn't keep people from having a great time up there, getting outdoors and getting some great skiing in and great snowboarding in.
Yeah. And we know that we have an amazing team of groomers, and they're going to get out there tonight, and it is going to be buffed and ready to go tomorrow.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of things to cover tonight. First, there's a school closure coming up, right?
Yeah, so schools are closed from tomorrow, the 14th, through the 19th, and Eagle Crest will be open throughout that period, and we're going to have the snow buses running daily. So if you want to get your kids on up to the snow or up to Eagle Crest, they'll arrive at 9 a.m. and they can take the bus home at 4 p.m.
Turn the TV off, get them on the bus, get them up. They'll come back exhausted. It'd be great for everyone.
Yeah, and I think one thing to note, too, is that we've added an extra day this weekend. So we have a six-day week this week and not a five-day week. So we're open on Tuesday. So it's a special day. It'll just be Porcupine, Hooter, and Ptarmigan, but we will be open.
And that's just because the schools are open, our schools are closed, and therefore you want to make sure there's a great place to go for the kids who are out of school.
Exactly. Yeah. It's parent-teacher conferences, so we decided, we're going to stay open, run the buses, and so it's a plus, an extra day for everyone.
Extra
Come on
up in the mountain. That's going to be awesome. All right. Now, you've also got, of course, the winter fireworks spectacular coming up here. That's this weekend, right?
Yeah, that's a big deal for us. I think it's a big deal for all of Juneau, actually. It's supposed to be one of the better fireworks shows in the country, and one of the more intimate mountain experiences you can have with fireworks. And it will be my first year checking
it
out.
At least legally.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, we don't encourage other stuff. But legally, you can have a very intimate firework safely. Yes. But you might want to bring earplugs. It's super, super loud. It's so close and loud and echoey. You don't want to miss it, but you might, it gets really, there's high decibel levels for sure. Yeah,
we call it spectacular for a reason, because it is loud, but it is really amazing to hear them bounce off the mountains and with the snow. And you know, somebody once said it was up close and personal show, and I totally believe it. I love that show. It's fabulous.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so that's coming up. That's Sunday?
That's on Saturday.
Oh,
so
Saturday.
Things will
kind
of kick off around 3:45. We'll have the band Tramwreck up there playing at the Day Lodge. Hey, I like that name. And then we're going to have bonfires starting off at about 4:30 going until 6. And at 6 p.m., the Torchlight Parade will begin, and that will be followed by the fireworks show. So
the Torchlight Parade in and of itself is super fun and beautiful. It's really cool to see that thing kind of come down the mountain like a little lit-up serpent coming down the mountain. You know, it's really fun.
Any aspiring photographers, get up there, do a long exposure. It'll look neat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The Juneau, the fireworks crew has already told us that this one's going to be the best one ever. And every year they tell me that. So I'm like, okay, last year it really was pretty spectacular, so I'm really looking forward to this year.
Very cool. All right. So that's the spectacular happening Saturday. Is there stuff happening Sunday as well that's kind of special, or just a normal day in the mountain on Sunday?
Normal day on the mountain, but there's more going on Saturday. Actually, you'll get your shot at a little bit of night skiing. We're going to extend the hours on the Hooter chairlift up until 5 p.m. on Saturday, and then the grill and mountain lift coffee will be open until about 6 o'clock as well.
Okay, cool. And then you were saying that there's a really cool, for Nordic skiers, I'm one of those. I'm a Nordic skier, so there's a clinic coming up for Nordic skiers. You're bringing someone in from out of town, right?
Yeah, we're bringing Megan Spirkland in, who is a PSIA national team member, and she's a race coach, pretty renowned race coach. Jeffrey can probably say a little bit more about her, but both on the 23rd and 24th, we still have openings available for skate and classic lessons under Megan.
Yeah, cool. Megan is, she's from Homer, Alaska. It's her first year on the PSIA national team. And one of the reasons that Megan was chosen for this national team, it's the best of the best of instructors across the country, is because of her race coaching and with all abilities. And there's a lot of Nordic racing that happens in other parts of Alaska. Juneau's slowly starting to catch up with that. But Megan is an excellent race coach. She's competed herself on the collegiate level. She's coached, school kids. I know she has a group of women that she's got them started into Nordic skiing in Homer, and now they're racing. So we're really excited to have Megan down here, and we're encouraging everyone to sign up for it. We're looking for intermediate skate skiers or classic skiers. And just
I know you,
perfect
Jake
for
just pointed
you,
the
Andy.
Finger at me. I know. I would say I guess I'm intermediate. Sure.
There
I'm
you
intermediate.
Go.
I'm going to go ahead and say I'm intermediate. Yes, I've gotten there.
There you go. So you can sign up for that. You can find the information out on Megan Sperklin at skijuno.com.
But she'll probably really challenge you and really, you know, really kind of reinforce good habits, tell you where you have bad habits, and then just really challenge you to kind of, you know, really reach for it there. It sounds really amazing to have a world-class ski coach. On hand.
Yeah, we're pretty excited to have it. So if you're interested in any type of Nordic ski racing, you're intermediate to advanced classic or skate skier, you know, this is for you.
All right. So from Nordic workshops to school closures and having an extra day open next Tuesday because of the school closure and all the way to the winter fireworks spectacular, big stuff happening up in Eagle Crest this weekend and all this next coming week.
Yeah, and lots of snow, we hope.
Yes.
And, yes,
skijuno.com. Knocking. Find wood to knock on. There it is, knocking on the wood right now. That's it. That's the Eagle Crest Ski Report. Thanks so much to Jeff and Jake for coming in.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
it's going to be a
Andy.
Hot time up on the mountain this weekend. And that's it for a Juno afternoon for this Wednesday. Thanks so much for joining me, and thanks to all my guests. NPR headlines are next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein.